Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 162, and it's a fourth New Japan grab bag. And today I'm joined by a first-time guest here on the show. He is a contributor at Voices of Wrestling, as well as the host of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. It's, obviously, Warren Hayes. Warren, hello.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to get into something that I don't talk about really often, you know, the music and wrestling themes. And so this will be a nice break. It'll be fun and touching on stuff that you know, that's part of the fandom, which is always what you cover here. So it's awesome. I'm really, really glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Definitely. I know that you're a relative newcomer to VOW, and we haven't scared you off yet, thankfully, which is nice because, you know, we need all of the nice, normal, quote-unquote normal people that we can find, I guess, to be part of the site. And as far as I can tell, you fit the bill, so I'm glad you're with us for sure, Warren.
Well, I mean, look, thank you very much. This is probably the nicest thing anyone has said to me this month, you know, calling me nice and normal. That's that's amazing. Maybe you could have a chat with my parents. That would also be that would be great as well. I don't know, but look, joining Val as a contributor and starting, you know, to get to know the group, the crew, you know, it's been very good, and y'all have been very welcoming, and I appreciate it. But you know what, like, the thing is that there's so many different types of fandoms, and I find that there's a lot of really, really smart people in the group. And you know, as they say, iron sharpens iron, right? So I feel like, you know, there's parts of what I have to do that in my own little sphere, my own little neck, my coverage, that, you know, I have to step up, and things that I hadn't thought about and things I hadn't considered, or getting an even broader perspective on things. So, you know, it's like, it's a good place to be. You know, I'm feeling it really, really, really well.
Yeah, we have quite the crew here, definitely. Yeah, and you're Canadian as well. I know that.
Yes,
you're from Newfoundland, I believe.
No.
Never mind.
No, see, I love it because this is the thing. This is the thing that's going to follow me for a while, I believe. It's because when I had Joe Lanz on my podcast, we did a thing on the Jericho Vortex a few weeks ago. At this point. And I really regret not recording it, but in the post-recording banter that we were having, we were talking about Canada, and I don't remember exactly how it came up, but we were talking about, you know, different types of employment and work that exists. And I don't exactly remember how it came up, but it somehow twisted into me living off the coast of Newfoundland, clubbing baby seals for a living. And Joe has been running with this, and he actually brought it up on a flagship a couple of weeks ago, where I'm like, okay, it's this is the lore now that we're going with. So, you know, obviously he's going to stick on that, which is fine, by the way. You know, it always gives us a little topic, but I live in Quebec City. I live very much in the French environment of the province, and I do not bring harm to baby animals for a living on a daily basis. That's not what I do.
See, I knew about Joe's bit, but I thought the bit came out of you like actually being from Newfoundland. So that's that was my mistake there. So I apologize, good sir, about that. But no, you are from Quebec. You are from yes, Griffin Pelletier exactly. territory. And you're part of the Canadian cluster at the site with Griffin and Girard. And we have all sorts of clusters here. You know, there's the Massachusetts people, there's the Chicago people, the Wisconsinites, the Canadians. It's all very Dragon Gate-esque with the different units bouncing around there. But yeah, look, Newfoundland, not Newfoundland, you're Canadian either way. So there you go.
Exactly. And I mean, look, you know, I'll try not to take it personally because I don't know if you know this, right? But Newfoundland is kind of like it's kind of like the joke of the country. I don't know if you know this.
The only thing I know about Newfoundland is that they have their own unique accents.
Right.
And it's also the setting of a TV show called Republic of Doyle. That's
yes.
That's kind of all I know really about the place. So, yeah.
Well, it's like Newfoundland is kind of like the New Jersey of Canada. In the sense that we like to, it's very easy to make fun of them. You know, it's very easy to make fun of them there. For the longest time, you know, the rest of Canada would refer to people from Newfoundland as Newfies. And I don't hear it as much. I think people like, you know, around my age probably know more about it than, you know, any current generation. But, you know, a Newfie is someone who is inherently stupid, essentially. And just so happens that, you know, it's a direct reference to people from Newfoundland. And there's an entire subgenre of jokes that exists called Newfie jokes that have permeated Canadian culture. Like, for instance, you know, like, you know, a Newfie goes into his job at the factory. It's 10:30 in the morning. The floor manager comes up to him and he says, "Hey, you should have been here at 9 o'clock." And the Newfie responds, "Why? What happened?" So it's that kind of stuff. It's those kind of dumb jokes. So I'm going to try to not take it too personally for people thinking that I am from Newfoundland. But then again, that's also part of the bit. I don't really mind. Newfoundland is a lovely province.
Well, if you need me to explain anything to you, I'll do my best, you dumb Newfie. But no, I'm kidding, of course. moving on here. Since it's your first time on the show here, Warren, I'll ask you this. How did you become a wrestling fan? How did you get into it?
Oh, gee, I'm bordering 50, right? So 50 years old. So when I was a kid, I was first exposed to Lutte Internationale, right? The Montreal territory back in the day. You know, you'd go to church and you'd come back, you'd turn on Télé Métropole here in the province, which was the national non-CBC Quebec national network. And on Sunday mornings you'd have Lutte Internationale, basically. So, you know, the outfit that Gino Brito and Andre the Giant, and Dino Bravo had at the time. So I was exposed, without really knowing it at the time, to like NWA, AWA, a lot of those stars. Ricky Martel was my first favorite pro wrestler. Because he was big babyface in the territory at the time. He was from my hometown as well, from Quebec. And, you know, Quebec and Montreal have this rivalry. So throughout that period of time, you know, Dino Bravo would represent Montreal, right? He'd be the Montreal guy. And Ricky would be the guy from Quebec. So you'd really have the regional babyface, regional heel thing going. Ricky would go to Montreal. He'd get booed. Dino would come here. He'd get booed. And so that's how I got exposed. And then eventually, you know, things happen. WWF swallows everything up. So that's how I really, so then, you know, the rest is history at that point. But that's how I got into it. Basically coming home from church Sunday morning, watching Lutte Internationale and just getting into it.
Cool, cool. And has music played a big part in your fandom over the years?
I think for a lot of people, okay, I don't want to speak for a lot of people. I'm going to speak for myself. I think it's inadvertent. Like, I don't think it's necessarily something that you, when it comes to wrestling themes, that you think about. But when you do, you realize how much of an impact it does have on how excited you are for a wrestler, how you know, the rush of hormones that you get of good, like, you know, of dopamine when you hear like a wrestler's theme kick in, you know, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it, you know, let's go even earlier than that, you know, Hogan with Real American. And you realize at some point that, and that music is really crucial to your appreciation of the show of pro wrestling, the spectacle of pro wrestling, what you expect from it. So I wouldn't say like it's something that I realized, like it was, oh, this is something that that is really an integral component. But I think as you get older, as you think about pro wrestling more, you're like, yeah, you know what? This was, it turns out it was really essential. It does add so much to the presentation and to your appreciation of pro wrestling as well. Like, for instance, look, I'll give you a really good example of things, you know, like I remember, here's something, like, you know, when my point where you don't necessarily realize at the time, but then when you start realizing, you're like, Junkyard Dog, right? He had Grab Them Cakes, right? In WWF, that the theme that he performed for the wrestling album and whatnot. But I remember him coming out on Saturday Night's Main Event. Can't remember which match. It doesn't matter. It's not privy to the point here. But he came out to Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. And I was shocked by that. I was like, wait a second. This isn't his theme, you know? And then next thing I know, I'm hearing this song like on, you know, the classic rock radio or whatever. Well, it was classic rock, you know, in 1987 or whatever. You get my point. Like, you know, then I hear it on the radio and I'm like, wait a second. This was the song that Junkyard Dog was coming out to, you know? And that's always something that stuck with me. It was like, okay, this is very interesting. And then it begs the question, why did he come out to a Queen song on that Saturday night's main event when he had a theme song, a WWF created for him that he used everywhere else? And you start to get into this mindset. So, but again, without necessarily realizing, maybe this is one of these moments where I started to realize that, you know, entrance themes, music did have an impact on it, on my appreciation, or at least my experience watching wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we actually talked about Junkyard Dog using that Queen song many years ago on an episode with Jeff Hawkins. So there you go.
Bless you for working with Jeff, by the way.
We love Jeff. He's a good egg. He's a good egg. Don't worry about that, folks. But today, Warren, we are here to do another New Japan grab bag. This is number 4 of these. And last episode, I did an AEW grab bag with Maura Johnston. And I figured Forbidden Door is a couple weeks away. It's the big AEW New Japan Super Show. Why not do a New Japan grab bag right now? So timing-wise, it just makes sense. And I have to say, Warren, the last time I did a New Japan grab bag was early last year with Neil David. And, you know, back then, things were still pretty shaky with Japan and the pandemic. You know, more guys were coming in, sure, but it was still clap crowds. There were still restrictions. As of now, though, with open borders and cheering crowds are back and new people getting pushed and new stables and they're having all these great shows and great matches and Forbidden Door is real soon and the G1's next month, I think you would agree. I think a lot of people would agree. New Japan is back, baby, and it's back in a big way.
I think, you know, the essential, like the only commentary really analysis you can have is, like you said, New Japan is back, comma, baby. Like there's no other way to put it. The promotion hasn't felt this good, like since Wrestle Kingdom really this year, hasn't felt this good, this exciting in a long time. It feels fresh, but you know, on top of it all, it feels unpredictable. This is what's really great, and I think this is a feeling that's been permeating throughout the promotion for the past 2 to 3 months, easily. Where it's just like we don't know. It feels like a lot of the old booking patterns are being thrown out the window, and we're really trying out some new stuff here, and I'm all for it. Like, this is really exciting. Best of Super Juniors was absolutely thrilling this year with a focus on New Japan guys, just showing that the talent is there. And now we're getting into G1 season. There's a dozen new faces within the tournament this year. Like, look, I don't think there's ever been a better time in recent memory for anyone to get into New Japan. Like, if you're new to it and you're wondering how do I get into it? When should I start? I think right now is a good place to start because they're clearly putting up the foundations for the next 10 years of the company. And it's fantastic. It's really, really exciting. Might as well get into it right now because you're going to be set for another 10 years. It's really great stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've got Okada versus Danielson and Ospreay versus Omega 2 at Forbidden Door. I mean, what more do you need? You know, I mean, come on.
I got goosebumps when Okada and Danielson was announced, knowing on top of that I'm going to be there. Like, how many times in your wrestling fandom, Andrew, will you have the opportunity to see a truly defining generational match, right? With two guys who are, you know, arguably, well, you know, Okada at the peak, you know, and Danielson still somehow being Bryan Danielson, you know, despite being more advanced in age. Like, we're not going to see Danielson and Okada like in 2036 when the guys are breaking down and it's an attraction match. No, we're seeing the guys like still at the peak. How many times do we have this opportunity as fans to see a match like this? I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, not many times. It's very much a pinch me, I'm dreaming kind of match. And things were looking real bleak too for New Japan for a long time. I mean, during the dark days of the pandemic, where you had all these clap crowds and they're doing like these 5 or 6 match shows, the matches are going way too long to fill the time, and they're running the dome with like 5,000 people in it, and it was not good at all. And a lot of people jump ship, and I don't necessarily blame them either, but I think now it's time to say, come back on board. You know, we've got Gene Blast Yoda Tsuji. You know, we've got Just Five Guys and their awesome theme song. You know, we've got Moxley back in Japan. We got Okada being just the absolute biggest prick to these young guys, and so much more good stuff. I mean, even House of Torture is way, way, way more tolerable now that fans can actually boo them instead of just stare at them in silence. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all very refreshing, and it's great to see, you know, as the Urukai would say, that the meat is back in the menu, boys. You know, so it's great. And yeah, it's unpredictable, but it's unpredictable in a good way. Like, it's not Vince Russo, swerve upon swerve. Oh, it's also crazy and hectic and chaotic. No, it's unpredictable, but yet fresh and exciting. And you want to see what happens next, Warren.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you bring up. Like, it's not swerving for the sake of swerving. You're just like, there's some legitimate bold booking decisions that Gedo is putting through here that are compelling. You know, that are just that are captivating, and you're wondering where we're going with this. I mean, you know, you don't have to look any further than the Dominion main event. So, you know, it keeps us on our toes, keeps us talking. And isn't that what you want out of your professional wrestling promotion? I think so. I believe so.
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure. So let's get to the themes here, Warren. We have 10 on the docket, starting with the first one here for the Roughneck, the Shuda, Shota Umino, John Moxley's first kid. And Umino's theme is by Inosuke Kitamura. This is Shooter.
We'll be right back.
no surprise here that the Once in Future Aces theme is heavily modeled after the old Aces theme, Tanahashi. I think the Tana influence is quite clear here with the big, energetic, gusto rock music, but I think there's also a little bit more of an edge to it, too. I think there's a little bit of a harder slant here, which, you know, if I can put on my my English major bullshit hat, I think there's the Moxley influence in this one. So it's trying to channel both worlds, I think, there, Warren.
I think so. I think the Tanahashi aspect of it comes out a little more because, look, I mean, you know, we don't want to call him a clone, right? But geez, New Japan, you're not making it easy on us to not draw the parallels, right? You know, there's those tasty solo guitar licks, right? You know, and that I really like. You know, what I really like them because they're really a cross between, you know, a New Japan theme and, you know, those anime opening credits, right? Where the, you know, you have all the stuff happening at once and these really fast edits zooming through the characters, and you have these this crazy guitar section going through, and I really like it. But you know, like, if you go about 45 seconds into the song, right, the rhythm picks up frenetically, right? Like there's an uptake in I guess the BPM, and I don't know if it fits Shota overall, because he comes, like, when he comes out, he's, you know, he waves to the crowd, he's not like high energy, high voltage, you know, he's like, yeah, let's go. He comes out and he's, you know, slapping a few hands and he walks around, but he doesn't have like that, you know, like a certain someone likes to say, he's not grabbing the moment by the throat, right? And I feel like the song has a little too much energy for what Shota, at least right now, conveys to the audience, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's kind of been the knock against Umino ever since he came back from Excursion. You know, he's trying to be too many things at once. You know, he's Tanahashi. No, he's Moxley. He's the Roughneck, but he's also a pretty boy. He wears the white jacket, but he also carries the black Death Rider jacket, too. He's coming out with all these accoutrements to give to kids. You know, it's all jumbled up, and it's been, you know, kind of a hindrance for him in a lot of ways. And I think the music, perhaps, unintentionally plays into that, too, just a little bit. So, I mean, the thing is, too, you know, a lot of guys, they come back from Excursion, and there are still some growing pains. They do take a while to grow into their roles. So I think it's been a pretty fair critique of him, but it's also pretty common for New Japan guys just in general, I think.
Yeah, it's, you know, the more we talk about it right now, the more I'm realizing it kind of it fits him. You know, because he's in a bit of this identity crisis where, you know, I feel like there's many people telling him many things at once, you know, because you're right, you know, like he comes out with the white gear. And then he has, like, underneath the Mox shooter T-shirt, right? Like that we saw at Dominion, and you know, he's clearly allies with the BCC, and the BCC are not about showmanship. It's not about pretty boys. It's about beating people up. Yes, he does still carry the leather jacket. You know, yes, he's still very much. He's the John Moxley rub from that G1 is still very, very present in his presentation, but it feels like a little hodgepodge right now. So I guess, you know, maybe his theme song right now does fit him, you know, maybe because we're still trying to figure him out. He's, you know, we want him to be this, but he acts like that. Yeah. That being said, I love the theme. I think it's great, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think as a wrestling theme itself, I think it's very well constructed. I think it's one of my favorite of the recent batch of themes, let's say over the past, you know, 18 months, let's give it that sort of range. Yeah. Does it really fit Shota? Well, you know, who is Shota Umino? Let's tie that down first, and then we'll see how the theme sticks.
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that this Okada feud has gotten him on the right track, at least.
Yes.
Not just him, but also Okada, too. I mean, asshole prick grumpy veteran Okada has been an absolute blessing to watch. You know, him having to deal with all these annoying kids like Umino and Narita and Kiyomiya. It's been so much fun, and the G1's coming up soon. They're all going to be in it, and I hope that they're all on the same block, because that would just be a real hoot and a holler war, and that's for sure.
that at the time that we're recording this, the blocks have not been announced, and this is what I am hoping. Okada is in a block with all the kids. That's what I'm most looking forward to. Maybe, I don't know, throw Kenta in there for, you know, I don't know, but just all the punk kids in the Okada block. That's what I'm most looking forward to. I hope they do that.
Yeah, definitely. So up next, we have a tag team theme for Mark Davis and Kyle Fletcher, Aussie Open of the United Empire, who were both IWGP and Strong tag team champions before they had to vacate them due to injury. And now they're signed to AEW, so it's been quite the month for them, that's for sure. Their theme is by Mikey Ruckus, and it's called Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Chose me. We're gonna put this thing down, just you wait and see. Raising my hand in victory is just a part of me. Drove to the mat and put to sleep is what you're gonna be. Now there ain't no stopping, the enemy is dropping. In case you have forgotten your positions, what we're copping, walk out music drops. We rock it like a haka. We pop it cause we pop them like oil red and vodka. Yeah, we chew it like Chewbacca and we hot like Waka Flocka. Like Lawrence tell the block em and the Aussie open lock em. Boom. You got it right. Boom. It's on tonight. Boom. You will respect the name in the spotlight. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
So if there was ever a song that would be perfect for an Australian Jewish wrestler, it's this. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Oi, oi, oi. It's perfect, Warren. It really is. This is actually a pre-AEW Mikey Ruckus song. He did a bunch of them for Rev Pro and Brit Rez and the like. And Aussie Open's indie theme was Close Your Eyes and Count to Fuck by Run the Jewels. So you can definitely hear the influence in that regard, I think, Warren.
Well, you brought that up, you know, in the notes, and I did not know that. First, I didn't realize that that Aussie Open used some Run the Jewels songs, or at least a song for their entrance. And then when I saw that in the notes, I was like, hell yeah, that's why I like the bass line so much. It's like, this is why I dig this song so much, because you can absolutely feel that influence in here. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is the only theme song to ever reference Orville Redenbacher, Chewbacca, Waka Flocka Flame, and Lawrence Taylor all in the same verse. That's the kind of lyrical penmanship I can appreciate there, Warren. Absolutely. But yeah, not a lot of lyrics in this, just kind of the one verse there. I think the Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi part does a bunch of heavy lifting. But it's a fun chant, and the boom part is fun too. So yeah, all in all, it's a fun little song, Warren.
I really like it. You know, obviously they play off the Australian sports battle cry, you know, that's used across multiple sporting genres. I don't watch sports, so I don't know how do you call them otherwise. But sporting genres, that's probably not it.
Sports.
Okay, that too. that probably works. It's a strong theme because there is the chant part to it, and it does get the crowd into it. And Kyle Fletcher has started using it more and more in matches as well, right? Doing the direct connection there. So I think that's good. I also think what I really appreciate the most here is that we didn't feel the necessity to go all, you know, Australian cliches with the song either, right? We're not going back to an Outback Jack style, you know, theme.
No didgeridoos in this one. No,
exactly.
No.
You know, and not, you know, talking about wallabies and whatnot. Like, for real though. Like, I appreciate that because I feel like it's still a slippery slope in wrestling sometimes. And I feel like this is, you know, maybe an indication that, you know, well, maybe we're capable of going past that. You know, we're still, like I said, we're still referencing a very clear, you know, the Aussie oi 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 chant is still very much associated with the country, but at least we're moving along from that. You know, we're moving away from that, which, by the way, I found out fairly recently, and Outback Jack's theme is an actual, like, real song that was recorded, like, in the 50s, like, in the 60s, right? Rolf Harris, right? Who unfortunately, the later part of his career was a little, or of his life was a little mired with some unfortunate bad behavior on his part. But I didn't even realize that. Like, it's an actual Timey Kangaroo Down is a song. Did you know this?
I'm not familiar with the themes of Outback Jack, but I think I've heard the name Rolf Harris before. So
yeah, he's a recording artist, an Australian recording artist, and did this song as a, you know, somewhat folky thing, and then was sort of, he was all over, like, Australian media. He did cartoon shows and all sorts of stuff, and then in the latter part of, well, like a few years ago, it was found out that he delved into,
he was a naughty boy.
Yeah, not necessarily great, but yeah. So yeah, I'm just happy to learn that you know, we're not going down the Outback Jack theme or styles here. It makes a lot of sense, and it's good, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now Aussie Opener signed to AEW, which isn't too big of a shock, given that they've had one foot in the TK-verse for quite a while now. And I know that New Japan fans aren't necessarily happy about this, and for good reason, but listen, when you don't have guys tied to a contract, these things can happen. I mean, look at Carl Anderson and that whole debacle. I mean, at least with AEW, they can still work New Japan, and I know they want to and they will, but yeah, if you're at AEW, this is just a no-brainer signing, Warren.
Oh, God. And I mean, look, you know, we can make an argument for, you know, the tag team division in AEW. You know, has it really been that good over the past year or so, maybe a little more? But, I mean, AEW was open with the premise of, this is going to be the place for tag team wrestling, right? And I think it still carries that reputation because it was, or that reputation slash expectation from fans, because that's something that we were promised from the get-go. You are going to have great tag team wrestling, so you sign Aussie Open. That, to me, is a statement that we are committed in AEW to bringing you great tag team wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Theme number three, and it's for a member of LIJ, El Inmortal Titan, who was just in the finals of this year's Best of the Super Juniors. Titan's theme is by Inosuke Kitamura, and it's called Dios Antiguo. So before this song, they would have to dub over Titan's CMLL theme, which is Under the Northern Star by Amon Amarth, which is a little bit different than this one, I think, especially with those growly vocals. But But if Titan is going to be more of a regular New Japan moving forward here, it makes total sense to give him his own proper New Japan theme. And I think this is pretty good. It's not the most complex song in the world, but it still sounds, you know, very epic with the melody, the da-da-da-da-da-da, and the choir in there too. It's pretty good stuff, Warren, I think.
Yeah, at about 25 seconds in, you have that great swell, you know, that great musical, like, uplifting swell, which is great because it feels epic, right? Like a god, right? Like Dios Antiguo means ancient god. So, and he's Titan, a titan. We can make all sorts of relations here. Like, you know, all of this sort of connects. It all makes sense. Does Titan, and again, like I haven't noticed, does he come out before the swell, like the 25? Because I feel he should come out at that moment when we get to that big epic moment. That's when he should pop out behind the curtain. I don't know if that's part of his presentation or not. And if you don't know, Andrew, it's fine. I'm just wondering out loud. It's like right now, does he do that? Because I think it'd work really well in that form of the presentation. But yeah, huge scale, right? It feels epic. It's soaring. Maybe not the most complex, but it has the atmosphere. It has the feel. It works for what he wants to present himself as, I believe.
Right, yeah. And the song, it reminds me a lot of Kenta's first New Japan theme, Overture. I mean, it's the same guy doing it, obviously, but the guitar tone is the same. It's same kind of sweeping, heroic atmosphere, too. And naturally, Titan is a much different wrestler than Kenta is, of course, but I think it still works for him as this, you know, very vibrant, colorful luchador and that kind of over-the-top atmosphere in a way. So, and then you mentioned the name Dios Antiguo, right? Spanish for old god, Titans are the pre-Olympus gods, Greek mythology. So, all in all, pretty clever stuff from Mr. Kitamura there, Warren.
Yeah, overall, I think it's there's some thought that was put into this, and it all works together. It all makes sense. No, I like it. I like it. And I, you know, Titan obviously is coming off of a fantastic showing at the Best of Super Juniors this year. So he's, you know, I think his theme suits him more than ever now, seeing that he's had such a fantastic tournament and a great final. I think it all connects. It works really well, and it works well in the context of where he is right now in New Japan. Hope it keeps staying epic and soaring for him.
Yes. Titan, I thought, had a great tournament, and that finals against Wato was incredible. I mean, that just the crowd was going bonkers for that match, and the matches with Speedball and Despy and whatnot, those are great too. And I've been a fan of Titan for a while now, so I'm happy to see him, you know, get the recognition finally and really find his way in New Japan too, Warren.
For sure.
Theme number 4, and it's for the leader of Bullet Club, or one of them anyway. There's quite a few running around, I guess, now. But it's for David Finlay, the Rebel, current Never Openweight Champion. And Finlay's theme is by Q Brick. This song is called Generations. This is the first proper heel theme of the episode, and it's pretty obvious, I think. You know, it's very sinister sounding, has that ominous melody and the slower pace to it. Talking about full Savage Generations, Dance With Me, It's Gonna Be a Nightmare, and it's definitely leaning into the more dangerous Killers and Savages era of Bullet Club that Finlay is, you know, part of. And I don't know if you noticed this, Warren, but at the beginning, there's that sound of someone exhaling. It sounds a lot like the one from Jay White's theme, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just, I noticed that, you know, at the beginning there. But yeah, you know, David Finley is now an evil, evil man, and this is an evil, evil song, Warren.
This is the equivalent of the bad guys in old Westerns wearing black hats. Like, there is no question here that this guy is ill-intentioned and has no goodwill, right? This is a bad dude. Like, they wanted to make sure that we understood that Dave Finley was a bad dude. So they have him wear this, you know, the pauldron, you know, with the spikes, whatever you want to call it, in his gear, you know, so he looks like we mentioned orcs earlier. Are we having a theme here going? But, you know, kind of like coming out of Mordor in Middle Earth. And then we have this gritty, dark, foreboding song. You know, there's nothing subtle about it, but I don't think there's anything subtle about what they want to do with Dave Finley here. And Dave Finley himself says, look, I want this Bullet Club to beat people up. That's essentially what he's been saying. I just want savages. That's the word he's been using. It's like you mentioned, it's even in the lyrics of the song. It's in your face. I like it. It's aggressive. It's a very angry song, but it works with the persona that David Finley has right now, which is exactly that. Just wants to come in, wants to prove himself, wants to beat people up. He wants to elevate Bullet Club, not New Japan, not, you know, Bullet Club. That's what he's there for. And he's just a bad guy. It'll be hard to find any redeeming qualities with a theme song like that, you know?
Yeah, and what's notable too is that this is the third David Finley theme in a year. Because he had the rock and roll theme, the whoa, yeah! Then he became the rebel and got Final Warning, that kind of post-hardcore kind of sounding song. Now he's got this. So it's been kind of a noticeable and a quick descent for Finley's themes into becoming more and more aggressive and more and more heelish until, you know, we got this one, which is, you know, full heel, Warren.
No, and, you know, I guess it shows, I guess it maybe there's a, it shows how they, you know, they were trying stuff out with Finley and they probably saw a window of opportunity, you know, with the departure of Jay White and a re-envisioning of Bullet Club, you know, maybe this wasn't the such a long-term plan after all, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes you react to things, you try stuff out, you see a window of opportunity, you take it, you try some things out. I'm not saying this as a knock that everything has to be planned out over 12 months, otherwise it stinks. That's not what I'm saying. But yeah, maybe this is also an indication of what they were trying to do with him. They were trying to babyface him. I wasn't quite working out. They gave him two themes to try and babyface him. It wasn't quite working out. Well, all right, let's go down this path then. And as it stands right now, I think it's the most interesting Dave Finley has been. I think his theme song has... look, I honestly think this is going to stick with him for a while, and it should, because I think it works. He's as an extension of his personality right now, and his personality is at its most compelling. I think as an extension of his personality, it has to stay with him, because everything's sort of falling into place very, very gently, smoothly. You know, I know he has to win over. There's a lot of people he still has to win over, but I think the parts are there, the actions are there. I think we're moving into into an environment where David Finley is going to be he's going to grow into this Bullet Club leader role. Tremendously, and he's going to be undeniable at some point, to steal someone else's catchphrase, I guess. But he is going to be undeniable at this point. So I think they have the formula for all the elements of his presentation here to stick. It'll be up to him then to dive right in or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been enjoying this Bullet Club Finley run myself. Not so much with the matches per se, because they've been more about the character work and getting over the viciousness of the character and all that, as opposed to having like five-star classics. But the character work itself, I think he's been damn good at it. And he's been confident and natural with it. And I do like this new iteration of Bullet Club with him and Connors and Maloney and Bloody Hands, Gato, and the rest, where it's not about looking cool and wearing t-shirts. It's about kicking ass, you know? And yeah, I know there are a lot of people who still don't really care about David Finley, which, you know, when you finally give a longtime mid-carder a push, that's the risk, you know? There are people who just won't care about them. Same with Sonata. But as far as I'm concerned, I've been enjoying it. So that's my take, Warren, anyway.
Yeah, no, I've been digging it as well. I think it's... I think everything they're doing with Bullet Club right now, Bullet Club hasn't felt this renewed or fresh in years at this point. Like, we have to go back pre-Jay White for this. Like, you know, Jay White stuff was fine, but wasn't like anything remarkable either. We really have to go back a ways, you know, to think about how Bullet Club was fun and exciting. And, you know, at least, look, they're not sticking with the status quo, Andrew. They're trying stuff out. You can't blame. And you got to get behind that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of changing things up, our next theme is both a singles theme and a stable theme. This is for Zack Sabre Jr. and The Mighty Don't Kneel, TMDK. Zack joined TMDK at the start of the year as the frontman of the group when it became New Japan World TV Champion. This song is by the band Mass Lines from the album Personality Cult. This is Young Punks. So I'll say off the bat here that I do miss Zack's old theme, Real Bone Master. I love that song. But I do understand that they're trying to make a clean break here from the Suzuki Goon era of Zack to this, you know, blonde Team DK era of Zack. So, you know, getting a new song here to symbolize that change makes sense. And it's still a very Zack Sabre Jr. song. You know, this obscure British punk band right up his alley, no doubt about it. And musically, it does fit very well with the frat boy vibes that this iteration of Team DK is going for. So, I will miss Real Bone Master, of course, but this song is still working very well for this, you know, group and what they're going for with Zack at the helm. Warren?
I think it fits Zack so much, you know? I think it is very much in tone with Zack Sabre Jr. He's, you know, well, first and foremost, like, you know, in all the themes we're talking about today, this is probably my favorite because it is right up my alley. You know, very, you know, 80s style DIY punk rock scene, you know, very Clash-like, Stooges, The Damned, the New York Dolls, you know, we're in that type of vibe, right? So, you know, and when you feel like that energy, you know, you listen to the song and what does it give off? You know, some, you know, cockiness, smarminess, smash mouth. If that ain't Zack Sabre Jr., you know, if that doesn't define him, then, you know, we probably don't vibe on the same things because that's exactly who he is. I find this connects so well with his personality. And I agree, like, the, you know, his previous theme was, like, he had had it for so long as well. Instantly identifiable with him, you know, it's like, made perfect sense. But yes, you know, this is the snap. We're moving away from Suzuki Goon. This is his thing now. I couldn't think of anything that just fits him better and gives the entire vibe. And yeah, the frat boy vibe, you know, it all just comes together on this song. I love it. I think I personally, like, this is my favorite theme we're talking about today. Because I think, like, in and about itself, I think this, the song holds really well all in and about itself. it vibes very much with my own personal taste, and it just meshes so well with Saber. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It's funny though, musically it works, but if you read the lyrics, this is not a wrestling theme so much as it is like a punk rock midlife crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like can't think, bad TV and other people's lives on the Instagram and Facebook feeds got me fatigued. Another night holed up inside, so we hit the streets and walked around routes we've run into the ground 1,000 times before. Penned in by city walls and narrow trains of thought, inspiration left us cold. The 9-to-5 took what's yours. Late nights and the early starts left you feeling short, like that mounting stack of bills. 40-hour weeks, fell into a set routine, lose sleep, gotta keep the pace, there'll always be targets to meet, bills to pay, and mouths to feed. Not a lot of Zachy boy, bloody Tekka's mates in that song there, but then again, I mean, Zach used to come out to an Idols song, so it's kind of par for the course, I suppose, there, Warren.
I'm completely with you on the lyrics part, but like this lines up with Zach's politics, right? It lines up with his, you know, with his own personal visions and belief system. Like all of this, like I said, it jives so much with Zack Sabre Jr. It's preposterous. It's like they didn't write this for him, but they damn well could have. It just, everything connects. It just makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, all we need is a reference to Tories and we'll be good, you know, just to
exactly.
Check all the boxes
some Boris Johnson jokes and we would have been off to the races on that one.
Definitely, yeah. And yeah, Team DK, they're a fun group, you know, Zach and Mikey and Shane and Robbie Eagles and Bad Dude Tito and...
The hysterical
Shane Haste, of course, yes, and Ichiban Sweet Boy, the whole gang. And this song does a good job of really setting the group's tone. You know, like House of Torture with their evil, spooky goth music or Bullet Club or whatever, this song does a good job of telling you what the group feels like. So, yeah, good song, Warren, for sure.
That's a really good point you bring out because, you know, a lot of wrestling themes, a lot of wrestling themes in general, but, you know, the ones that Mr. Kitamura is putting together, very guitar riff heavy, right? Lots of solos and so on. So this one does stand out, right? Because it completely breaks that mold. That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Theme number 6, and it's for the android, Alex Coughlin, the newest member, or one of them anyway, of Bullet Club, part of the War Dogs with Gabriel Kidd. And Coughlin's theme, or at least his most recent one, is by Golden Hymns Sing Hurrah. This is The Android.
Yeah.
boy, did we pick the wrong time to talk about this song, because Coughlin just turned heel and joined Bullet Club, so he probably won't use this one for much longer, if at all, but we'll see. But regardless, it's a very interesting song, I think, because it sounds so much like it's from some, you know, 80s sci-fi B-movie, and that fits because the original android gimmick and outfit with the mask and the metal vest and the turrets in the back, they looked straight out of an 80s sci-fi B-movie. So say what you will about the song, it fit the gimmick at least, Warren, that's for sure.
That's exactly the best way to put it, because I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of glad that he dumped the accoutrements, the costume.
They look pretty
you
silly.
Know, in the, yeah, yeah. Just in the context, you know, because there's a lot of things that, you know, New Japan does well, and one of the things that it hasn't quite nailed down, and maybe some people will say it's to their credit, and I think I would agree with them, but one of the things that they don't do very well is the sports entertainment aspect of it, right? The showmanship aspect of sometimes you'll see on WWE, for instance, that work out better because they have the production, they have the camera angles, they've done this before, whatever. You know, since New Japan is more used to shooting this as more quote-unquote sports style, well, there's some things that don't come across as well. And I think that's one of the things that helped, that didn't help the android look get across, because it wasn't particularly shot well, wasn't particularly lit well, whatever, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, like you said, it's interesting because it did fit the gimmick. I find it's one that's very difficult to get into. Like, it doesn't get me hype. It doesn't get me excited. It's not, like, I feel it's probably my least favorite one in the bunch that we're talking about today in the grab bag. Despite the fact that, you know, there's a personal connection in this song to Coughlin as well. Despite the fact that I really like Alex Coughlin and I feel like he's, you know, he's on the cusp of something. If he can just nail it down, maybe this Bullet Club thing will help him out. But yeah, it's just one that doesn't do much for me as a wrestling theme, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does have one of my favorite things, which is the female singer for the male wrestler theme. I do love that. And you hinted at it. The singer of this is Coughlin's sister, Sam. And the band used to play with Coughlin too. So there's that personal connection there for sure. The thing is, though, the mixing isn't that great, mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to decipher the lyrics, really. What I could make out is, prepare to be destroyed, there's nowhere to hide from the eyes of the android. And Coughlin has those, you know, giant, crazy eyes of his that he opens real wide. He looks like a proper psychopath, so there is good writing there, I think. But, yeah, overall, this is one where I like the idea of it a lot, but the execution, not so great. And to be fair, they're an indie band. I'll give them that leeway, but
sure.
Yeah, it could have been done better production-wise. But again, I do like the female singer for the male wrestler award.
You know, and I don't want to completely bury the thing either. It's just like, you know, it doesn't jive with me as much as a lot of the other songs that we're talking about here. Like, it does have feeling. It does have texture. There is something going on here. There's thought behind it. You know, we're not, you know, diving into the Creative Commons bin of wrestling themes, you know, on a royalty-free website. That's not what we're doing here. Just to make sure that I'm clear on that, it's just, you know, I appreciate the connection. I appreciate what it probably meant to him to allow his friends, his family to get in on this as well. I think it was a nice nod. Does it work out? I don't know. But like you said, you know, maybe this is all a moot point. Because he's going to get the war dogs are going to get their own theme, and that's going to be that for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know everyone kind of rolls their eyes at, oh, another new Bullet Club member, and I get it, but I am glad that him and Gabriel Kidd are getting more of a shine here, because they're really good, and they've toiled away on those New Japan Strong undercards for way too long. So if this is what it takes to get them a proper push and get them in a spotlight with, you know, Bishamon and the tag champs, then hey, Bullet Club for life, I guess, Warren. I don't know.
I mean, look, that's what we're doing right out the gate. Like, the guys have never had, like, you know, in Japan, as far as I know, they've never wrestled as a tag team in Japan. And
they were in World Tag League last year.
Oh, they were in World Tag League. Okay. No, you're right. Well, look, they're coming out the gate here, joining New Japan, and they're going to be, they're up next for the tag titles. I mean, this is going to be fine. They're going to be fine. You know, like, straight out the gate, we're going to be okay. Even if they don't win them out at their first try, which they actually might too, the way Gato is booking these days, you know, it's going to be the best possible outcome for both of them. And you know, I am very much into giving all of these new directions that we're going in a chance because of how fresh it is, you know. And I know, you know, Coughlin had maybe some issues getting over with the Android stuff, which everyone thought was a little silly. And, you know, Gabriel Kidd has had his own, you know, issues on his own. So, but, you know, if there was ever a moment where it feels like, okay, we're wiping the slate clean and we're trying out something new, right now is exactly that. Coming into Bullet Club, challenging for the titles. Yeah, let's see where this takes us. I'm excited about it because both of these guys are great.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Moving on now to our next song, and it's for another United Empire guy, TJP, one half of Catch-22 with the good Italian boy, Francesco Akira, the junior tag team champions. TJP's theme is by The Heroes Lie, and it's called Where's Your Hero Now? Getting a bit emo here, getting a bit moody, but it's TJP. You know, he dresses and looks like a moody emo boy. I think, to quote the man himself, if there was a color that was darker than black, he would wear it. And, you know, he is almost 40, mind you, but he looks and wrestles like a man who's 25 years old. It's incredible. And to be honest, who amongst us isn't still jimmying out to Black Parade, Warren? Okay, let's be real here.
That's a fair question to ask, and yes, absolutely. Yeah, and he wrestles like he's in his 20s. Brother, he still looks like he's in his 20s. Like, I think TJP is going to be one of these people who, like, physically, you know, will never age. Like, go back and look at what he looked like during the Cruiserweight Classic. The dude hasn't changed. You know what I mean? So, it all connects, and, you know, I always get a giggle when I hear his theme start, because it is so very much him, very much emo. You know, and I even think I drew some comparisons with Seether. I don't know if you remember that band.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know, and I went back and I listened to a few of their songs. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? We're close. You know, there may be a little more new metal than emo, but, you know, I feel like there's some... We're on the same level field here between this song and what Seether would put out. But I mean, look, it completely works for him, right? It's like you said, you know, his thing is he's emo. He, you know, he wears the hoodie with the spine exposed in the back. You're like, okay, you know, I get it. It's fine, you know, it's fine. But like you said, like, he still wrestles like he wrestles like he's of the age of listening to that kind of music. So it works for him. And he still looks very young. And man, isn't it crazy? You know, when you think about his WWE presentation, right? When he was Cruiserweight Champion, it was the video games and the, you know, the 8-bit theme. It's nuts how much of a, you know, just the diametrically opposite we are now. And maybe this is by design too, right?
I suppose, yeah. I mean, he's no longer the clean-cut video game guy. He's the public enemy. You know, he's going for that kind of darker slant. And you know, any emo jokes aside, this is a good song, I think. I never heard of The Heroes Alive before, but they're big wrestling fans, apparently. And they do have a history with TJP, too, because he used one of their songs in the Cruiserweight Classic way back when. So there's that connection there.
Interesting.
And it does have the anthemic chorus and the dour lyrics about, you know, cowards. You thought they were brave, but they're running away. Where is your hero now? Your heroes are nowhere in sight. So yeah, it's proper moodiness going on here. But again, it's a good song, and it is very different than his WWE themes. And his first New Japan theme too, the Mega Ran song, which was also very video game inspired for him.
Yeah, maybe he was just tired of that and ready to move on to something which is closer to him. And I think it works out. I think it's all connecting really well with this, you know, with what he's doing today as well. Like, you know, say what you want about TJP and his personal beliefs and his own brand of nonsense that he puts out there. But, you know, he's probably going to go down as one of the best wrestlers we've ever had that will never get the full proper credit for being as good as he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for the man's basketball takes, but, you know, I am a big fan of him in the ring. Him and Akira, too, as the tag team. I think Ketsu 2, along with Aussie Open, are, like, you know, the best tag teams in the world at this point, really. And
oh, absolutely.
You know, as long as they don't ask Dan Maloney up for bubble tea, they'll be okay, I think. Just don't do that, guys. He'll be fine. But yeah, Ketsu 2, TJP, just awesome wrestling all around, really, Warren.
Yeah, absolutely.
Theme number 8, and it's for another tag team here, the current IWGP and Strong Tag Team Champions, Bishamon, Hiroki Goto, and Yoshihashi, the lads as we call them. Bishamon's theme is by Kazushin, I think it's how you say it, K-A-Z-S-I-N. This is War God. Bishamon is the Japanese name for a Buddhist god of war, hence War God, there you go. And it manages to be a very good mashup theme for Goto and Yoshihashi because it combines the epic, badass, traditional East Asian warrior music and the hard rock stuff from Goto's theme with the unnecessarily long intro from Yoshihashi's theme. So it's really the best of both worlds there, Warren. But yeah, this is a real kick-ass song, I think.
Rich, when you sent me the notes, well, did I just call you Rich? Andrew, sorry. You have two. You have, well,
you
have
got
two
one of my
names
right.
What's that?
You got one of my names right, at least. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, you have two first names. What do you want from me? Andrew, when you sent me the notes and all the files, and I listened to the song, I never realized how absolutely wild this theme is, and it's instantly become like one of my favorite theme songs in wrestling right now. Because, you know, once you go past the very long intro, you know, which harkens back to Yoshihashi's unnecessarily long theme entrance intro. Once you get past that, it just turns into something absolutely bonkers. Just like this mashup of old and new. Like, you know, you've got the instruments, shakuhachi, I think is what the wind instrument is called, and the shamisen, which is the string instrument that starts at first, and then it all starts. So good. Like, it is so, so good. I think Bishamon at first was, you know, a tag team, and I'm like, all right, these guys are fine, whatnot, but they've really grown on me. And maybe this connects to what I was saying, you know, when we were talking at the very, very start of the show. It's like, maybe the theme song helped them grow on me, and I didn't really realize the impact the theme song was having on me, you know? Because when I listened to the song and it about itself, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put this on my workout rotation because it rules.
Yeah, it's a kick-ass song, like I said. Yeah, and actually, Kazushin, they're the same duo who did Goto's singles theme and Naito's theme too.
Yes,
and that's it, I think. So they've got a pretty good hit rate there, I'd say.
Those are other two theme songs that I absolutely, absolutely adore. So if anything, I'm consistent right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also, it feels a little, I guess, Nakamura-esque in a way, you know, that kind of blending of the old and the new there. And there's even a Nakamura sound effect at the end of the clip there. So there's that connection there too. But really, you know, the blending of the traditional and the more modern rock stuff, that's always been kind of Goto's thing anyway, too. So, it's a great song, yeah.
And they lean into it. They lean into it into the presentation as well, right? Where they come out with more traditional, robes, and you know, I know the staffs that they have. They're not bow sticks. I don't remember what the term is exactly, but you know, they come out with, you know, they lean into it a lot more, which is what, again, that was. That was part and parcel for Goto as well. That was his thing. But I feel like it's even, they've even upped that part of the presentation. Like, not even Goto himself had this rich presentation. So everything works here for a team that has come together and just really has, it's won me over and won a lot of people over, just from being two singles guys in chaos working together to, No, these guys are an actual great tag team that should be in conversations. It all works. It all comes together, and they feel important. They look important. The theme absolutely adds to that.
Yeah, they've been a real jolt to the tag division for quite a while now. Guys like them and Aussie Open and Team DK and whatnot, they're awesome. They rock. And I know Forbidden Door, again, is coming up real soon. I would love to see a rematch with them in FTR. Because I thought that their match at Wrestle Kingdom this year was awesome. So, yeah, I know Yoshihashi, he's the bag of socks, and Goto is the geek or whatever. But I love them. And you know, they are two great tastes that taste great together, in my opinion. So let's give them their flowers. Why not?
Huh? I agree. They're very well put. Two great tastes that taste great together. Absolutely.
Second to last theme here, and it's for one of the members of Just Five Guys. So it's just one guy here. And it's Doki. Yes, the talented Mr. Doki, Gino Gambino's favorite wrestler. And Doki's theme is by Inosuke Kitamura. This is Dolor. Happy Halloween! So this is a very dark song here. It starts off with that weird sound and the tink, 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 and then this grungy guitar comes in. It's all very harsh. I mean, it's called Dolor, which is Spanish for pain. So that's the score right there, you know. But yeah, Doki, a man on the darker edge of things with his mask and his pipe and whatnot. So, you know, he may not win a lot of matches for our boy Doki, but as far as getting the right tone for his theme song, it works for sure, Warren.
It's a very interesting one. And, you know, does it fit Doki in the sense of his positioning, like what he does? Because, you know, he's usually the job guy. He's the guy who takes the, you know, that's been his thing for such a long time now. Is Doki spooky? Does he frighten us? Sure, he's got the very unnerving look, let's put it that way, but, you know, I don't consider, in the scheme of things right now in New Japan, I don't consider Doki to be a source of fear, you know, if that makes sense. The theme is interesting. It is very atmospheric, and it does convey the sense of an unnerving sense of dread, you know, of the unexpected, of bad things that are going to happen to you. You know, we were having the same type of talk around David Finley's one, whereas David Finley feels a lot more in your face. This one feels more like it'll sneak up on you and get you, kind of thing, which is maybe what, you know, our boy Doki might turn into eventually, where it's just like, you know, he'll just hit you where it hurts most when you least expect it. But, you know, the theme does a lot of heavy lifting for his presentation right now. I don't think it, you know, does it suit his push? Oh, maybe not. But again, you know, maybe we're just laying some framework here for the future in that regard.
Well, listen, if a move like the Doki Choki doesn't instill fear into people, I don't know what would, okay? Come on. I mean,
well, yeah.
Let's be real here.
Maybe then, maybe not calling it that. Maybe.
Well, what's interesting to me about this is that, you know, Doki got into New Japan in 2019 as a last-minute replacement for Despy in Super Juniors because, you know, Despy broke his jaw. But he debuted with this song, ready to go. So I'm curious, you know, how fast it took Kitamura to whip this up, because, you know, it's just kind of out of the blue here. I mean, it's not a very complicated song, mind you, but still, I'm sure this wasn't in the plans to have this, you know, guy from the Mexican Indies just come in out of the blue and get a song here. So I am curious about that whole deal there, Warren, I guess.
It's an interesting thought. I hadn't realized that until you mentioned it right now. It could bear to imagine at the very least that, you know, maybe the day we do decide to quote unquote get serious about Doki, maybe a theme song change will be in order in that regard to get something which will be closer to what they want him to be. Not unlike what we did with Dave Finley or what we're expecting with Alex Coughlin. Since it was out the gate like that, a little unexpected. Maybe it was just something Mr. Kitamura had in his had on an external hard drive somewhere. He was like, oh yeah, I'll just pull this one out. There you go.
What's that? He's some unknown lucha scummer coming in. I got just the thing for him.
Dusts off the old zip drive.
Yeah. it's funny too to see like the growth of Doki among the fans, because he goes from like this unknown entity to this beloved cult favorite, but he still has the mask and the pipe and the scary song, and it's like, yeah, Doki, let's go, buddy, you got this, come on, you know? And I mean, myself, I became a big Doki fan over the years too. I mean, I didn't like him at first, but he grew on me. So yeah, I mean, I have grown accustomed to his face, you might say, or half face, I guess. So
the proportion.
Yeah, love the old Dokester there, Warren.
But I think calling him a cult favorite, I think that's precisely it. That's exactly what he is. And, you know, I mean, you know, clearly they like him in New Japan. You know, he's probably well liked backstage, and, you know, Gedo probably doesn't have many issues with him. He feels like he's the kind of guy who, okay, Booker man, tell me what you need me to do and I'll do it kind of thing. You know, he feels like one of those dudes. And, you know, he got into a short little program with Tetsuya Naito. I mean, yeah, wouldn't be doing that if they didn't think that he didn't have something. You know what I mean? So it's all good.
Mm-hmm. Last theme here, and it's for the bad child, Junior Healy. No, wait, that's Problem Child. Never mind. Sorry about that. No. This is for the bad child, Leo Rush, a member of Chaos. And Leo's theme is by Dretty, and that's spelled Dretty1, because he's cool like that. This is Bad Child.
I'm a bad child. They all came to see me. Who look, bitch, I got it packed out. Rockin' that rig, always shit designer fit all blacked out. I've been running shit up lately, look, my pockets maxed out. Ride around with Brody and some fashion, boy, that scatter. We holdin' lines up at the ATM, bro, too much cash out. I rode out to Atlanta, saw my bitch, she bring that ass out. I walk inside the plug house with some money and brush some bags out. Walkin' to the bank, my pockets full, got something to laugh about. Yeah. They call me the bad child, yeah. Youngest of the bastards, yeah. They can be the old.
So I think this song has the distinction of having the most swears in a New Japan theme, because I don't think Okada's theme has this many bitches in it. still, though, it's a pretty cool song, very sleek and slinking, and has that cool intro with the piano and the trumpet in there, too. It's definitely a different kind of song that we're used to in New Japan, because they've had rap themes before, of course, but this is like a legit American rapper doing his own song and not, you know, Kitamura in the studio or Rocky Romero or what have you. So it's very unique for sure, Warren.
Yeah, I'm actually even surprised that Leo Rush didn't use one of his songs here, because he, you know, he does his own recordings quite a bit. So I'm a little surprised, but I mean, at the same time, I think this is fine. You know, is this what you think about when you think wrestling themes? No. But I also think that there is something very interesting about about using this again in an environment where, you know, guitar licks and, you know, very heavy presentation and very loud. You know, this is very different, and it also suits Leo Rush as well. That's the vibe that he gives off that he's been working on ever since leaving WWE and coming back from his umpteenth retirement. This is what he's been working on. At the same time, this is the vibe that he wants. I think it works for him, and it stands out. It's extremely different in the Japan setting, and I think that's also something you need to do with your themes. You do have to be able to pinpoint them out and attract attention. When it starts, you're naturally, I feel, just by the audio, you're naturally compelled to pay attention because it doesn't sound like anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leo just has that uniqueness about him himself, you know, the way he moves around the ring, the way he dresses and all that. And obviously he's a big rap guy too, because yeah, he raps himself, and he does know Dreddy. He's worked with him in the past. There's that connection there. But if you're going to stand out, yeah, it's not just about the looks or the moves. It's the music, too, in this case. And yeah, we've talked about plenty of rap songs on this show over the years. But in this context, you know, having a song like this in that environment is certainly different and certainly unique. So Leo did a good job of picking the right kind of song for that that goal, I'd say, Warren.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I've enjoyed some of what Leo Rush has put out. You know, I think the first thing he did, if I remember correctly, and my memory might be a little blurry here, but I think one of the first things he did after his time in WWE was release a song under the name Leo, right? And it was called I Wonder, which was it was meant to be like this very soulful, no, not soulful, that's not the right word, maybe a little more not even R&B, how would I describe it, like a loungy, anyway, kind of love song where he sort of sang along with it, but you know, heavy on the auto-tune kind of thing. But right there he had the foundations of, like, I see a direct line between that song he released, I think it was in 2019, if I'm not mistaken. I see a direct line between the foundation that he had laid there and this theme song that Dreddy or Dret One created for him. Because it's all the same vibe. I feel it's all part of the same universe that Leo Rush has created for himself, if that makes sense. So, you know, I can't knock a pro wrestler for having this type of awareness, or what do you want to call it, brand direction or artistic direction, whatever word you want to use, whatever term you want to use. I appreciate that. I think it's something that even a lot of wrestlers could bear to put a little more thought in. Rush obviously puts a lot of thought into how he presents and markets himself. There's definitely a through line with everything he does.
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad that Leo has really found his groove again and he's got the spot in New Japan, because it's cliche at this point with the retirement jokes, I know, but it's kind of true. I mean, Leo's career has had its fair share of starts and stops and ups and downs, but I think lately he's really hit his stride in New Japan with the Yo Tag Team and the Super Juniors run and the matches he's had with Hiromu and Speedball and those guys. So yeah, it is really great to see him, you know, be here in this spot again, because he is way too good and way too talented to let all that stuff just go to waste. So as long as he's healthy and motivated and is, you know, able to, you know, still be around in New Japan, I will gladly watch him, because he's pretty awesome, Warren.
I agree. I'm completely with you. I think he, you know, the motivation is the key factor, right? Because I think he said it on, I don't know if it was a straight up interview or on a post-match press conference, where he had said something to the effect that tag teaming with Yo relit his passion for wrestling, you know, gave him a good spot at the very least. Because Yo has a bit of a contentious, or had a bit of a contentious relationship with pro wrestling as well, right? Where he as well, he's a visual artist. He does things, you know, as well on the periphery of pro wrestling as well. So, you know, to a degree, they might have been kindred spirits, and they bonded on this, you know, this relationship that they have with pro wrestling. And if it benefited both of those, because even Yo, you could argue, has been much more interesting than any other point in his career. But, you know, since we're talking about Leo Rush specifically, I feel like this was a good environment for him. I think the tag team did work out for him, and we're all better off. We are all better off having him wrestle. Like you said, he's too talented to not be enjoying. We've seen what he's done since joining New Japan, but even throughout 2023 so far, that great match with Hiromu and the tournament itself, like he's been a star throughout all of this, which to any observer should not come as any surprise. But it's just good to be able to bask in that and enjoy Leo Rush wrestling to his potential and as a motivated, energetic pro wrestler.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And Warren, thank you so much for being here. This was just so much fun, your first time on. Again, apologies for the Newfoundland mix-up there. I hope I didn't offend your Quebecois sensibilities too much. But no, in all seriousness, thanks again, man. This was just a lot of fun.
it's quite all right. Thank you very much. And it's not as much a Quebecois sensibility as opposed to I don't want to be a Newfie. But no. Seriously, thank you very much. I was thrilled you asked me. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate it a great deal. Thank you very much. Andrew, not Rich. Andrew.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we all make mistakes. We know that by now, I'd say. But but any plugs you want to give, go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I do a wrestling podcast, Shock and Surprise, called The Mr. Warren Hayes Show. I record it live on YouTube every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. if you're ever interested in that. Otherwise, everything gets available on video on demand or on your audio feeds the very next day on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or as I said, right on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, so on and so forth. I also do AEW Dynamite reviews every week where I do a deep dive. So you want to subscribe to all my stuff. That way you you won't miss a thing. And you can also read my occasional writings over at voicesofwrestling.com.
All right. And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. You can find all the great shows on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. VoicesOfWrestling.com/Discord for all discussions and comments. VoicesOfWrestling.com/donate for any donations. Just click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. Warren, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andrew. It was good to be here.
All right, for Warren Hayes, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.